KMTT, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah. Thursday's Shir, the series on redemptive sketches with Harav Moshe Tarigan.
One of the great challenges of the process of Geula is not only recognizing a partnership with Am Yisrael, with parts of Am Yisrael that are no longer observant in the classic sense and no longer able to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the great values of Har Sinai, an issue I discussed in a previous year, but at a less ideological level, at more of a interpersonal level. Partnering with people and respecting them, defending their virtue, loving them rather than assailing their character, demeaning or degrading, denigrating. Fortunately, there are many voices in Am Yisrael which take a very critical, harshly critical view, issuing very, very dismissive statements about Jews that aren't, unfortunately, religious or orthodox in the classic sense, and obviously their lifestyles are lifestyles that we have to very clearly disagree with and disclaim. But in terms of an overarching love for Am Yisrael, it's not necessarily a topic specifically to Geula. The great lover of Am Yisrael, Reb Leib Yitzchak Mibardishev, the 19th century Hasidish Rebbe, not really Hasidish Rebbe, but the 19th century Rebbe who was always trying to defend their virtue. But it has particular relevance to the process of Geula. There's a medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, in Parsha Aleph, based on the pasuk in which Am Yisrael, so to speak, says, Al tiruni shani shcharchores. Don't look at my flaws. In Tanakh, for better or for worse, being black and shachor is a flaw. White is beautiful, black is unattractive in the biblical context. Of course, it doesn't carry the same political or chas v'shalom racial connotations, but in Tanakh, that's the setup. So Am Yisrael pleads with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al tiruni shani shcharchores, shesh zavasli hashamesh. And Chazal take this as a reference in Shir HaShirim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is angry or is enraged by Nevi'im of his who constantly point out or highlight Am Yisrael's flaws, its blackness, its limitations. The Medrash mentions two Nevi'im who were particularly guilty of that. Al Talshein Eved Al Adonav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want its Nevi'im, or his Nevi'im, to accuse or to prosecute or indict the virtue of Am Yisrael. So the Medrash cites two Nevi'im, and actually three Nevi'im, but one of them is Moshe Rabbeinu. The first person who was guilty of perhaps harshly accusing or assailing Am Yisrael's integrity and their virtue is Moshe Rabbeinu. The instance which this Medrash cites is a very famous instance, the Achilles heel of Moshe, the one moment in which Moshe perhaps erred, even slightly, where Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock and is punished very severely, very, very significantly by being banned entry into Eretz Yisrael. So many Mefarshim question, what's the difference between hitting the rock or speaking to the rock? According to this Medrash, the real crime of Moshe Rabbeinu was not his attitude or interaction with the rock, but the attitude and interaction with Am Yisrael. This was the great defender of Am Yisrael, someone who lived selflessly, almost self-annihilating life on behalf of Am Yisrael. And he became slightly angry at their insurrection. Remember, this was the new generation. Already it's in Parshas Chukah. So Moshe perhaps had certain expectations that history would not repeat itself, that this new generation of pioneers who would enter Eretz Yisrael would be a bit more steadfast, a bit more loyal. And when they continued with the same doubt and uncertainty and questioning and suspicion that Moshe had been exposed to 40 years or 38 years earlier, so he becomes a little bit disappointed and he utters a word which perhaps for us would be acceptable, but for Moshe is completely unacceptable and according to this Medrash and one or two other Midrashim, is the real cause for his downfall and for his very severe penalty. Moshe says, Shimu na hamorim hamin ha'sel hazeh natzilachem. Moshe calls them morim. Moshe calls them rebels and rabble-rousers and insurrectionists. And this is the same Moshe who in Parshas Kitisa laid his own life on the line so that Am Yisrael would be spared. V'im ayin mecheinina misifracha asher kasafta. This is the Moshe Rabbeinu who davened on behalf of Am Yisrael's rescue time and again. Yigdal nakoach Hashem kasher dibar taleimor. More than his erudition, more than his piety, more than his basic kindness and virtue, which is on display in Parsha Shmos, Moshe's primary quality is his commitment to Am Yisrael. And at every point in Moshe's career that his commitment to Am Yisrael surges, his relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu is enhanced. One vehicle, one conduit to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through love of Am Yisrael. You love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so deeply that you really are brought to love His children, His people. Sometimes people say they love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it may not be a true selfless love. It's a love of self, which is translated into a love of God. The real litmus as to whether the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really deep and thoroughgoing is a person's attitude to Am Yisrael. And when Moshe articulates this phrase, which is nightmarish in terms of Moshe's standards and the standards he set until now, Shumu na hamorim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that Moshe has to be replaced, and at least according to this Medrash, and another Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah, Parshat Tzadik Tes, this is the real reason for Moshe's punishment, because he says, Shimu na hamorim hamin hazel hazeh. And Moshe is the first person. The truth is that Moshe's, I guess we could call it careless. It's hard to call it careless when you're describing Moshe Rabbeinu, but from our standpoint, we could use the word careless. Moshe already before, well before this event, 40 years earlier, had said certain things, certain phrases, certain nuances about Am Yisrael, which would one day come back to bite him or to haunt him. First of all, Moshe had questioned in Parsha Shmos when HaKadosh Baruch Hu dispatches him to redeem Am Yisrael, so Moshe questions whether they'll really listen to him. Am Yisrael is too subjugated, they're too defenseless, they're too hopeless to really listen and believe in my message of redemption. So the Torah describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivering two signs to Moshe. Presumably these are miracles or signs to convince Am Yisrael of Moshe's agency, of Moshe's being dispatched by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One sign is the water turning into blood. One sign is the staff turning into a snake. A third sign actually is Moshe sticking his hand into his shirt and removing it and temporarily experiencing a white tint, which is called Tzaras, Mitzaras Kashalek. We seem to believe that these are just simply that, signs to impress the people, to perhaps foretell or foreshadow some of the makos, some of the miracles which will be performed through the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. But this Medrash, and the Rambam, or not this particular Medrash in Shir HaShirim, but a different Medrash, and the Rambam in one of his famous letters in which he paraphrases some of these Midrashim, claims that Moshe was actually punished because of this momentary assailing of Am Yisrael's character and their virtue and their ability to believe in Geula. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so disappointed with Moshe that he has to stricken him or strike him with tzaras, even momentarily. This is a punishment for Moshe Rabbeinu, not just some arbitrary sign to display HaKadosh Baruch Hu's might and Moshe's authority. In fact, there's a beautiful medrash, as an anecdote, when Miriam has tzaras, and Miriam's tzaras is much more infamous and in many ways nationally known. It gets national air coverage because the entire camp has to wait for her, has to delay their march through the desert in the end of Parshas Baloscha. So the Medrash has Moshe visiting Miriam, sympathizing with Miriam, sort of comforting her by saying, I too had Saras and it will pass. And it's really a testament to the ability to empathize with people, to try to find experiences from your past that may not be exactly identical to the suffering that your friend is enduring, but at least is a reference point for you to somehow taste, even in part, the flavor of their suffering and of their misery, and to give them the sense that this is a shared burden rather than some weight that they're carrying alone. So Moshe turns to Miriam and says, "Don't worry, I too had tzaras." He really had tzaras for the 7 days that Miriam received it, but Moshe looks back at this moment as a punishment, not just as the delivery of a sign or an omen. Another consequence of Moshe's stating the Hein Lo Ya'aminu Li as such a verity, as such a obvious reality, the Hein Lo Ya'aminu Li, Hein means for sure they won't listen to me. So the Medrash Rabbah in Devarim claims that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in sort of an ironic manner, informed Moshe of his imminent passing, of his imminent misa, of his imminent ptira, and of course the consequences of that imminent ptira, that Moshe would not be granted entry into Eretz Yisrael. So Moshe is told, Hein karvu yamecha lamus. And Hashem employs the same term that Moshe employed, challenging or questioning the integrity of Am Yisrael, as if to remind him that part of Moshe Rabbeinu's punishment, part of his onish, is because of this, again, very slight, very casual, very slight. In our standards, it may not even be considered a sin, but from Moshe Rabbeinu's standpoint, and given the degree of love that he felt for Am Yisrael and the sinners amongst Am Yisrael, not just Am Yisrael proper, but the entire Knesset Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu's criticism and slander, again, in by his standards, is responsible for Moshe Rabbeinu's very, very stiff sentence, not entering Eretz Yisrael. Yet a third Medrash comments not on Moshe Rabbeinu's employment of the term Marim, and not even on his employment of the term Hein Lo Ya'aminu Li in Parsha Shmos, but an even more stunning error. It's stunning because you would think that Moshe should be given a pass or should be excused for this. In Parshas Korach, where unimaginably Moshe's authority is being challenged again by Dasa and Aviram, by Korach v'Adaso, the 250 cohorts and colleagues of Korach, and Moshe makes every effort to placate, to mollify, to negotiate, and they're just obstinate. There's no leeway. There's no flexibility. So Moshe uses a term which may be taken as a tease or a taunt. When Dasan and Aviram and Korach rile and incite the mob against Moshe, Bamidbar Perek Tezayin Pasuk Gimel, the Torah writes, Vayikahalu al Moshe v'al Aharon, they gathered, they mobbed Moshe and Aaron, Vayamru alehem, and they challenged them, Rav lachem, too much, you have too much power, too much authority, Kichal ha'ida kulam kidoshim, uvitocham Hashem, the entire people is holy, why do you continue to elevate yourself in sort of a condescending fashion? This was at least the claim of Korach v'Adasa. So, a few psukim later, Moshe Rabbeinu in Pasuk Zayin agrees to a standoff the next day. There's a challenge. The 250 people will take pans of coals and will attempt to prove their own worthiness, and of course we know that tragically they were incinerated. So Moshe informs them that the next day, this is a few psukim later, four psukim later, Perek Tezayin, Pasuk Zayin, Usinu Vohen Eish, Moshe says, you shall place the fire, V'simu Alehen Kitares Lefnei Hashem Machar, V'haya Ish Asher Yivchar Hashem, God will select Hu HaKadosh. This is all a very respectful and dignified response. We'll follow through on your request. And then the suffix of Moshe's statement is Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. It's enough. Stop complaining, stop arguing, the members of the tribe of Levi. You'll have your moment to prove your claim. This is unnecessary because Moshe had already informed them of the next day's pending trial. But not only was it an unnecessary stab or jab, but the term Rav Lachem B'nei Levi may at least have been interpreted by some as a taunt, as a mimicking, because they had told Moshe, Rav Lachem Kichol Haida, so Moshe responds, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. Again, there's nothing glaring glaring or criminal about this statement, but at least you'd expect someone like Moshe Rabbeinu to deploy greater sensitivity in dealing with this mob and saying things, even though he's under duress, and even though his authority is being challenged, Moshe should still maintain his equanimity. And this phrase deviates from that presumed calm of Moshe. So because Moshe uses the term Rav Lachem B'nei Levi and assails the integrity even of the sinners, so Moshe begins to pray 40 years later, or in Parshas Veschanan, not 40 years later, Moshe prays for his entry into Eretz Yisrael, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu halts his tefillah, and he says, Rav Lecha, Al Tosef Daber Elai Od Badavar Hazeh. And the Medrash, this is a Medrash in Bamidbar, Perek Yud Ches, Parsha Yud Ches, namely, the Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by employing the term Rav Lecha, reminds Moshe, remember what you told my people. You hit them with a stick. This is the metaphor in the Medrash. Machis bechutra over madi machis at lucky. You taunted them or teased them with this term. So there are three moments in Moshe's history that he is held accountable for. And this is Moshe Rabbeinu. Not just the greatest person to ever live, but the greatest defender of Am Yisrael's virtue. But there are three moments in which he's a little critical of Am Yisrael. And in one of those moments, at least in two of those moments, one can claim, when it comes to his treatment of Korach v'Adaso, and when it comes to his treatment of the people who are mobbed and gathered against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asking for water, maybe they deserve these statements. He's not assailing innocent people, he's assailing sinners. And yet because he uses these terms, he employs such denigratory and dismissive terminology, all of these contribute in some fashion to Moshe Rabbeinu's replacement and the great tragedy of his being barred entry into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe is the first example of this Medrash, Al Tiruni, the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Shani Shcharchores. The second example is none other than Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi dragged the prophets of Baal up to Har HaKarmel, and in a very stunning and striking and presumably convincing fashion, debunked all of their creed and belief. He afforded them the first opportunity to attempt their successful sacrifices to Baal, and after relentless efforts, their korbanos failed. And immediately Elio doused his own korbanos in water, and within seconds, the fire had descended and had accepted Eliyahu's korban, ratifying Eliyahu's belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a monotheistic God. And you'd expect an entire community to be stirred to some sort of awakening, some change. And astonishingly, they're not. People have very elaborate self-defense systems, and they can justify all sorts of events and phenomena and input, and the Nevi HaBaal are left unmoved, and Eliyahu is furious. And he shrieks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is in Melachim Aleph, Perek Yutes, Kano Kinesi, Lashem Elokei Yisrael, Ki Azvu Brischa B'nei Yisrael. And he repeats it twice, Kano Kinesi. Eliyahu appears to be the prototype Kanoi, who fights, who campaigns on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. And after repeating the statement, Kano Kinesi, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a very famous passage, tells him that I'm not found in the loud noise and the bright lights and called the Mamadaka. Then in the end of this discussion, Hashem points out someone standing at the bottom of the mountain. At the bottom of the mountain stands Elisha. And effectively, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Eliyahu to transfer his cloak, his aderes, to Elisha, because Elisha is replacing Eliyahu. Minutes after Eliyahu had attacked the integrity of Am Yisrael, he's replaced. His career ends. In hauntingly similar fashion to the trajectory of Moshe Rabbeinu's career. Two Nevi'im, great lovers of Am Yisrael, great Ovdei Hashem, But when they cross that line, each in their own way, and begin to harshly critique Am Yisrael, I won't even use the word hate, there's no hatred here, but it's language that's offensive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children, to his people, so their careers end. And this is the second example cited by the Medrash in Shir HaShirim, the example of Eliyahu. The third example is the example of Yeshaya. Yeshaya, in Perek Vav, has a very epiphanious vision, and he's standing in the Azara, standing in the Mikdash, and at one point he utters his inability, his unsuitability to receive HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vision, and he says in Yeshaya Perek Vav, Ki ish tmei svasayim anochi, uvitoch am tmei svasayim anochi yoshev. I am an impure person, ish tmei svasayim, which is a very impressive confession of humility. Uvitoch am tmei svasayim anochi yoshev. But he broadens this self-effacement by claiming that he's not only impure himself, but he lives amongst impure people. V'toch am t'mei svasayim anochi yoshev. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, according to the Medrash, you can efface yourself. Ish t'mei svasayim anochi nicha. V'toch am t'mei svasayim anochi yoshev asmeha. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is unacceptable. So what happens? Immediately, in Yeshaya's vision, an angel, a seraph, takes a coal, and he touches the coal on Yeshaya's lips, effectively burning Yeshaya's Lashon Hara and dismissiveness about Am Yisrael, burning it off of his lips, and this is an onus, this is a punishment. So Yeshaya doesn't suffer the same degree, the same severity of Moshe and Eliyahu, but he's reminded that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need Nevi'im to assail Am Yisrael. He requires Nevi'im to protect their virtue and preserve their dignity and to defend their motives and actions and to love them selflessly rather than assailing and attacking. The opposite is also true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects Nevi'im, or if not Nevi'im, at least agents, even if they're not worthy, simply because he senses in them a love and a defensive stance and a preservation of Am Yisrael's virtue. And here Chazal provides us with two examples. One is the example of Gidon. Pasuk in Devarim, the beginning of Shoftim, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol shi'arecha, asher Hashem elokecha nosein lecha l'shvatecha, v'shaftu asa'am mishpat tzedek. Typically, this pasuk refers to the legal context of adjudicating and judging with balance, in a just fashion. V'shaftu asa'am mishpat tzedek. But the Medrash Tanchuma in Shoftim, Simen Daled, has a very, very different view of the connotations of v'shaftu asa'am mishpat tzedek. The Medrash says, Sheyiyu matin umilamdin aleihem schus lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires and requests from his leaders, whether it's judges or prophets, that they should look to defend Am Yisrael, attempt to reconcile their behavior, to justify it, to support it, to ratify it, rather than critiquing it and dismissing it. The Medrash continues, Mimi atalamed, who is the prototype of the defender of Am Yisrael's virtue? Mi Gidon ben Yoash. Gidon was one of the Shoftim of Sefer Shoftim, but certainly not one of the shining figures of Sefer Shoftim. Militarily, he was extremely successful, but religiously, Gidon was, according to the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, a leader of Rekim, of empty, vagabond people. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu waited an entire generation for someone to defend Am Yisrael's virtue. And the Medrash continues, Kivan shenimtza schus begidon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu discerned some merit in Gidon, Shalamar Aleim Schus, who defended their virtue, Miyad Nigla Lav HaMalach, the Malach appears to him. And the Medrash refers to the sections in Shoftim, Perek Vav, where Gidon complains, so to speak, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why is Am Yisrael suffering at the hands of Midian and so many other foreign powers? What happened to the Bris? What happened to the covenant? Instead of just acknowledging, well, they deserve it because they're sinners and whatever comes, they have it coming to them, so to speak, Gidon challenges the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and challenges the Rabbanu Shel Olam, of course, not on personal terms, but on behalf of Am Yisrael. And even though, when held up to some of the other figures in Sefer Shoftim, Gidon may be a bit deficient, in this particular detail, defending the virtue of Am Yisrael, he is the supreme personality of Sefer Shoftim, and probably aside from Shimshon, which is a completely different phenomena, was probably the most victorious of all the Shoftim throughout Sefer Shoftim, through all the leaders. And this Medrash in Parsha Shoftim, in the Torah, Medrash Tanhuma Simin Vav, has us believe it's because of this defense of Am Yisrael's virtue. The second example is taken from a Yalkut Shimoni Melachim Beis about Yeravam ben Yoash. Previous year I discussed Yeravam ben Yoash. He wasn't just an empty person who hung around with empty people. He was an idolater. He forced others to commit idolatry and paganism. And Yeravam ben Yoash was a king of the northern kingdom of Am Yisrael. And in his era, Am Yisrael experienced significant territorial expansion and military triumph. And the Yalkut Shimoni in Melachim Beis, in Reish Lamed Beis, questions, V'harei Oved Avodah Zarah Haya, wasn't he an idol worshipper? Why did he merit all these great military accomplishments? Ela b'bnei Shilo Kibel Lashon Hara Al Amos. Medrash described a situation where someone sent very, very deprecating statements about Amos, and Yeravam refused to listen, refused to accept. Shilo Kibel Lashon Hara. So the irony is, you've got Moshe, Eliyahu, and Yeshaya, who in all areas are tzaddikim and righteous leaders, and they're punished because of their harshly critical statement about sinners. People who may deserve their critique. And on the flip side, you have Gidon ben Yoash and Yeravam ben Yoash, who are two evildoers. Well, Yeravam certainly is. Gidon is an ambivalent. There's a lot of ambivalence about his personality. Because of their staunch commitment to the virtue of Am Yisrael, that's what a true Navi is. Now, this is obviously a value independent of the process of Geula, but it has even greater import in the context of Geula, particularly our current Geula, which, as I mentioned earlier, we are partnering with Jews who behave in ways that, let's face it, challenge us and frustrate us, and in some cases anger us. And one of the great challenges of Geula, I believe, for the next couple Doros, for the process of Geula, is to maintain that sense of love and partnership, ideologically, as I mentioned in last year, to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent secular Zionism as a movement, but also interpersonally, just to have a sense that although history has beaten religion out of most Jews, their belonging to the Jewish experience through a nationalistic call is something which deserves our honor and respect and support. There's a beautiful, beautiful psikta in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a discussion with Mashiach. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Mashiach that I'll only send you if you're willing to bear the sins, bear the suffering of the people that you're redeeming. And of course, Mashiach responds, yes, without question. If I have to suffer, if my coming, if my Mashiach, obviously it's a very provocative medrash. It's in Psikta Rabasi, Parsha Lamed Vav. But if my arrival demands that I tolerate sinners and perhaps suffer onshim or challenging forms of geula because of their shortcomings, then it's something which Mashiach gladly accepts. And that can be seen, of course, as a metaphor, that to advance Mashiach, to accelerate Mashiach, to participate in Geula, there's a necessity for a level of tolerance to sinners and to participants in the Geula, in the process of Geula, who may no longer be adherent and committed to mitzvahs in the classic sense.